Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It is Tuesday, July 21st, 2015. I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, and I don't think we're going to have a thunderstorm during the show. I think we'll be just fine, but we probably will have one later on today. We're having thunderstorms every day now here. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about something we've never talked about before on this show. And indeed, I kind of suspected that this was a toxic problem, but didn't know anybody was talking about it until only recently. And the subject is toxic chemicals on airplane flights, what you're being exposed to and how it's affecting your health. But perhaps more importantly, how it's affecting all the stewardesses and pilots and people who are flying on planes every day. There's actually a term now for the health effects that happen to these airline workers. It's called aerotoxic syndrome. And my guest today is founder of the website Toxic Free Airlines. That's at toxicfreeairlines.com. And she has information there about what you can, about health effects that happen when people fly on airplanes, especially frequently, and what you can do to be safer. And that's what we're going to be talking about on the show today. She has had her own experience, in being made ill from toxic chemicals on airplanes. She was a former cabin service director for British Airways. She flew for nearly 25 years with four different airlines until she was, quote, ill health retired, unquote, in 2009 with a written diagnosis of aerotoxic syndrome. So without further ado, hi, Dee.
Hello, Deborah.
And hello. And let me just tell the listeners that we're talking to Dee from the United Kingdom. So it's a very long distance call.
Sorry, am I sounding a bit faint?
If you could talk into the phone or talk up a little bit, that would be great.
Okay, I'll try my best.
That's better. So anyway, why don't you start off by telling us your story? What happened?
Well, like you, I'd never heard of aerotoxic syndrome, but I kept getting lots and lots of things wrong with me. I was ill for many years. It was one thing after the other, constant flu. Then I was developing unexplained aches and pains, constant headaches. And I didn't know what was wrong. And this went on for quite a long time. And then one day I saw a headline in the newspaper over here that said, toxic fumes in all jets. And suddenly it all made sense. So I went and got myself tested, and I had a very high level of toxins from the fuel, from the engine oil, and high levels of nickel, which comes from the engines. And I've never heard this ever mentioned. And then once I started looking on the internet, I found that over here in Parliament, they've been discussing it in our House of Lords since 1999, but no crew knew about it, and certainly passengers, most passengers still don't know about it. Nobody warned us that this could happen.
Well, do you think it's because you and other flight attendants, and I'm assuming pilots and everybody who works on the planes, that you're being exposed to it more frequently than, say, me, who doesn't fly very often?
Yes, we are. We're getting chronic low-level exposures. So every day you are getting a certain amount because the air you breathe in the cabin is completely unfiltered. But some people are more susceptible than others. So a passenger can get sick just from one flight. Some flights have more contamination than others. But certainly a very high number of flight attendants and pilots are getting sick now, yes.
Tell us more about specifically what the chemicals are that you're being exposed to.
Well, you've got all the chemicals from the fuel. So you've got things like hexane, heptane, methane, benzene, a known carcinogen. You've also got organophosphates, which are the chemicals that are causing the most concern. I don't know if you've had a problem in America with farmers. Over here, our farmers had to dip their sheep in organophosphate dips, and they were all becoming very, very sick.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
You don't have that there. But you've got the Gulf War veterans. They were exposed to organophosphate. So it's the same illness as that. So that's why when you go on a flight, you get off feeling like you've caught the flu. And everybody thinks they've got a virus. But actually, it's chemical flu. And it's coming from the organophosphate. There's an organophosphate in the hydraulic fluid called tributyl phosphate. And there's another one in the engine oil called tricresyl phosphate. And organophosphates were originally developed as nerve agents for warfare. So for governments and airlines to say that they're not harmful, that they're not harming people, is complete rubbish. That's what they were designed to do. They were designed to harm the human nervous system, and that is exactly what they are doing.
So I don't even know what to ask you. It just seems incredulous to me that, I mean, I've done a fair amount of flying in the past. I don't even remember the last time I took a flight. It was probably across the United States, which is about 3,000 miles, to go from Florida to California. And I know that when I'm on a plane, I can smell what I think is the jet fuel.
Yeah.
And the first thing I do when I get on the plane is, now I'm going to say this and you're probably going to tell me I'm doing exactly the wrong thing. But what I do is that I get on the plane, I sit in my seat, and I immediately open up the little air thing completely open so that I can get as much fresh air as possible.
You don't want the air that comes in is unfiltered. So the airlines, in their lovely little in-flight brochure, they'll tell you the air is filtered. It's only the recirculated air. So all the air that you breathe comes off the engine. And it's unfiltered, and it's getting contaminated with all these chemicals. And it's only once the air has gone through the cabin and it gets recirculated, then it gets filtered. So the sort of symptoms you're likely to experience, nose irritation, eye irritation, cough, dizziness, vertigo, headache, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. Eventually you'll start to feel like you've got flu, runny nose. Some people will also get tremors, and this is the effect it's having on your nervous system. You'll get chest pains, heart palpitations. Not everybody gets everything. Some people will get more mental symptoms. They'll feel depressed or anxious. Other people will have the physical ones. They'll be in pain. They'll feel like their legs aren't working properly or they can't walk after a flight. Other people will have heart attacks. These chemicals can make the brain swell, which is why you get this terrible headache. It can cause brain hemorrhages. It can cause pneumonia. So it's really serious, and the reason why it's been kept so quiet, the airlines do not want you to know about this problem because they're not planning on fixing it. It would cost a lot of money.
But it just seems to me to be negligent to be exposing passengers to this. I mean, probably worse than negligent. I can't think of the right word for it.
I know. Irresponsible. It certainly is. I mean, it's also illegal. The airworthiness certification itself says that the passenger and crew compartments must be free from toxic fumes and vapors. And that isn't the case at the moment. They keep saying fume events are rare. Well, I get to see all the reports in the UK, and they're happening every day. I don't think something that happens every day is rare.
No.
And these are just the ones that are getting reported. There's an awful lot getting unreported because the average fume event lasts for less than a minute. So by the time people have thought, have I smelt something or haven't I, it's gone, so they don't bother to report it. And plus, your sense of smell goes, especially crew who've been flying a long time. When I had a CT scan, I was told that the damage to my respiratory tract was similar to a solvent abuser. So you lose your sense of smell. Some of the chemicals are odorless. The engine oil quite often is odorless. But sometimes it smells like sweaty feet. So although you're smelling something, you don't know what it is. We never, ever reported that smell because we didn't know. We just thought passengers were taking their shoes off.
I understand. We need to go to break, but when we come back, we'll talk more with Dee about various toxic chemicals that you may encounter when taking an airline flight and what to do about it. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Dee Passan. She's the founder of the website Toxic Free Airlines, which is at toxicfreeairlines.com. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Dee Passan. She's a former, what do you like to be called, flight attendant?
We call it cabin crew in the UK, but flight attendant's fine. I don't mind.
Cabin crew. I like cabin crew. We'll call you by the UK term. She's a former cabin crew member from British Airways who retired because she got sick from the toxic chemicals that she was being exposed to. And we've been talking about that. You know, when I smell something when I'm in the plane, there are definitely times when I smell quite strongly something that I think is fuel. And it might be something else. But it seems to come and go. So I was really interested in you saying that these episodes are just so short that you're not quite sure that you smell something at all. And I know that I've smelled things and then it stops. And it never once occurred to me that I should report it. Yeah. And because as a passenger, I guess, even though I'm probably more aware of toxic chemicals in my environment than most people, and I was aware it was going on, I just kind of thought, well, this is the way it is on a plane. And I don't know what the rules are for planes, and I don't like it, but I just thought, well, this is just the way it is.
Yeah, but they're not filtering that air at all. So on summer flights, you will have a problem where you've got a seal in the engine that's either worn or it's got a hole in it, then you're going to get a very big contamination in. And those are the flights where you might actually see the mist in the cabin, although that's quite rare. You'll have other people possibly fainting or feeling unwell, and you'll hear the calls for doctors. But even on ordinary flights, the seals aren't designed to seal all the time. They're kept in place by air pressure. They're wet seals. So you are going to get a certain amount of contamination. So it is a design flaw. Up until 1962, the air used to be drawn in from the outside and it didn't go through the engine. But back then, they decided that they would save money by combining the two. They thought engines need warm air for propulsion and passengers need warm air to breathe. So let's combine the two. But unfortunately, it's a flawed system. And it's not very good for people's health. The only aircraft currently flying that doesn't use this system is the Boeing 787. And that is the only aircraft that I would ever fly on now.
And do many airlines have that plane?
Yeah, more and more. At least Boeing have acknowledged the problem. They actually gave evidence to the British House of Lords. And they originally said it was to prevent any possibility of cabin air contamination. And then I think they realized afterwards they shot themselves in the foot a little bit because they've still got lots of 777s and 767s flying. So they retracted that slightly. But that is the real reason. But at least we have got the 787 that uses a completely different system and the air doesn't come through the engine. So you're far less likely to have fumes on that.
Oh, that's so good to know. That's so good to know because that's something that we can do.
Exactly. And if you have to fly on something else, which personally I wouldn't do, I wouldn't risk it. 7 years ago, I couldn't even change channels with a remote control. I was so mentally confused. I didn't know what day it was. I didn't have the energy to even go and have a shower. So I'm very scared of ever going back to being like that again, so I just won't fly.
When was the last time you flied?
It was a few years ago. I have flown since I stopped flying as cabin crew, but I take a mask with me now, one that's designed to screen out oily mist. And touch wood, I haven't got sick when I've used that, but then I haven't been in a full fume event. A fume event is when you get a lot of fumes in the cabin. And the problem with that, from the time the pilots realize there's a problem to actually getting you down on the ground and getting those doors open, it's going to be about half an hour. And the pilots have got full-face oxygen masks. The passengers have got nothing. So you really do need to take something with you.
So, okay, so you need a mask that's specific for oily mists. Where do you get such a thing? I mean, I know you don't know, like in America, where, because you're getting it in the UK, but like where do you get it in the UK?
Have a look
maybe
on
I
the
can
internet.
Figure it out.
Yeah, I've got ones called FFP3s, which are the best, and they do screen out chemicals as well as bacteria and viruses. There's an association in England called the Aerotoxic Association, and that was set up by an ill health retired captain, fantastic man called Captain John Hoyt, who's done so much to help people. And his website is aerotoxic.org. He sells masks on there, and he's also written a really, really good book. I've been sort of researching this subject for the last 7 or 8 years, but there was still a lot in it that I didn't know, and it's called Aerotoxic Syndrome, Aviation's Darkest Secret. And it's really, really good. It's worth reading.
Oh, I'll take a look at that.
Before you fly.
Yeah. So when did the term aerotoxic syndrome come about?
That came about in 1999 as well. Three scientists, one of them was American, one was French, and I believe the other one was Australian. They had been looking into this problem, and they'd heard about passengers and crew complaining of getting sick, and they looked into it, and they found that it was a very real problem, and they dubbed it aerotoxic syndrome. And it's called a syndrome because it affects multiple systems of the body. You don't just come off with one thing, and it can depend on your own level of health as well. So for somebody, for instance, who's had chemo and wants to fly off somewhere nice and warm to recuperate, that can be very dangerous because they've already had a lot of toxic chemicals in their body. People on certain medication are much more susceptible than others. If you've just had your house painted or if you've just bought a new mattress, so you've got an awful lot of chemicals already in your liver, then you're going to be much more affected than somebody who, say, goes for a run every day and excretes all the toxins.
Yeah, that makes a big difference, how much you already have in your body. Here in America, that's called body burden. Do you call it that in the UK?
No, I haven't heard that term.
It was the Center for Disease Control here in the U.S. started calling it body burden, and so now that's what it's referred to. Like, there's numbers they track what is the average body burden of the citizens of America, and it's actually pretty high. And there are reports that show. Oh, we need to go to break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dee Passon from ToxicFreeAirlines.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dee Passon. She's founder of the website Toxic Free Airlines at ToxicFreeAirlines.com, and she spent more than 25 years flying with 4 different airlines until she retired because of ill health in 2009. And now she helps people understand aerotoxic syndrome and helps people who have been affected by it and helps people prevent being affected by it as well. You have on your Facebook page a group called Angel Fleet. Tell us about that.
Well, that came about when I was told if there's a problem, the company really would like to know about it. So I thought I'd find some facts and figures then that I could tell them about. So I went through all the obituaries that I could find online. They went back 3 years, and I discovered that a crew member had been dying every single month for the last 3 years.
So that's a lot.
It was shocking. And I sat up all night on my computer writing down all these names and ages and dates, and I compiled it into a list, and I sent it to my company, and I said, does a crew member dying every month constitute a problem that you should be doing something about? I didn't get a reply to that letter, unsurprisingly, but they did terminate my contract very, very shortly afterwards. So I do think the two were connected. So I carried on compiling my list. It was very difficult to find out, though, because this isn't something that gets talked about very much. And then one day, somebody told me that the obituary board had disappeared as well. So now nobody knew what was happening. And I thought, I think it's time we had a place where we can actually remember these people, make sure that they aren't forgotten, and we find out just how often this is happening. So March 2014, I hadn't got a clue how to set up a group. I'm not very technically minded at all. But I sat at my laptop and I clicked on Create Group, and I called it Angel Fleet because we've got the long-haul fleet and the short-haul fleet, and now we have the Angel Fleet as well. And within seconds, I had people contacting me and asking if they could help. And we're now, I think we've gone over 7,700 members. And the list of crew who've passed away that I've got has got over 500 names on it now. And that's one airline in one country, which is horrendous. So what we're going to do now is we're in the process of constructing a website, and we want to invite all the other airlines of the world to join us. And we will remember our former colleagues, and we will also find out just how often this is happening. And we won't let the airlines keep this quiet, because they have to sort this problem out and not just keep pretending it doesn't exist. For a long time, they've got away with lies, basically. They keep saying, for a while they said there weren't any toxins, so we proved they were there. Even their own government tests have proved that all these organophosphates and these other toxic chemicals are there. So then the next excuse was, well, they're below exposure standards. Well, there's a quote here from the World Health Organization, and this is 25 years ago. In 1990, the World Health Organization said of just one of these chemicals, it's one called triorthoquethylphosphate, because of considerable variation among individuals in sensitivity to TOCP, it is not possible to establish a safe level of exposure. So there are no exposure limits for these chemicals. They don't exist. And even if they did exist, they would only apply to the workers. They wouldn't apply to passengers. Passengers who include pregnant women, small children, the elderly, the sick, they must be exposed to nothing. The law says they must not be exposed to any toxic vapours whatsoever. And so does the airworthy certification. So if that isn't happening, then the aircraft isn't airworthy. And passengers should be complaining, because the airlines don't really care. We've seen that over the last few years. The airlines do not care how many of their crew die. They will replace them with younger and cheaper ones. But what they will care about is if their passengers start saying, we're not going to give you our money until you make that air safe. And that's what we want to happen. We want passengers to complain to the airlines, to the FAA, to your government representative. I think there was somebody called Senator Feinstein, and there was some law passed that the FAA were supposed to sort this out. And so far, that hasn't happened. There's another group on Facebook. It's called Aerotoxic Syndrome Voices, and that's run by an ill-health retired American flight attendant, and she keeps that updated as well. And I've got my one on Facebook called Toxic Free Airlines. So between the two of us, there's lots of information. You'll find out all the latest. I mean, we do have proof now. It isn't just us claiming this. There have been three postmortems done on three British crew who recently passed away, and all three were found to have inflammation of the heart. The exact same symptoms in all three, which is very, very concerning. So this is a problem that we really do need to get sorted.
It absolutely is. And as I'm sitting here listening to you, and I listen to guests speak every day, as I'm listening to you, I just want to point out that what you're talking about is people dying from exposure.
Yeah.
That's not usually what we talk about. What we talk about is, you know, people get headaches or cancer or, you know, all kinds of different symptoms can come from different chemicals. But you're talking about documented evidence that people are dying from toxic chemical exposures in their occupation. And
yeah, they trusted their employer. They thought it was safe. And they've been really seriously let down. The company I used to work for, they've just had two deaths in the last week. any other company would get shut down, any other sort of, if you had a building site having this many deaths, something would be done about it. They wouldn't just keep pretending this isn't happening. They keep coming out with the same statement. We see no trends in cabin crew illness that would indicate a problem. We wouldn't operate a flight if we believed it posed a health and safety risk. No one is making them prove that. They're just repeating these statements saying, oh, a spokesman said, but they're not actually saying, show me how many crew you've got off sick today. Show me how many crew have died in the last 10 years. They are absolutely keeping that completely secret. And this was one of the reasons for Angel Fleet. We're now finding out. Last year, in just one company, there were 23 deaths of serving crew and nearly 50 of retired. And some of the retired ones hadn't got anywhere near retirement age. They were ill health retired, like me. The youngest was 39. And of the serving staff, the youngest was 28. We just lost a 23-year-old. This can't go on. These lives have to stop. Like you said, it's people's lives. And they're not just dying a few years early. They are dying decades before their time.
Yeah, yeah. This is not right. This should not be happening. We need to go to break, but when we come back, we'll talk more about this. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dee Passon. She's founder of the website Toxic Free Airlines, which is at toxicfreeairlines.com. And she also has a Facebook page where she has lots of updates, including, I was just there during the last break, including an announcement of this radio show and other interviews that she's done. And you can just go to Facebook and type in Toxic Free Airlines, and the page will come right up. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dee Passon. She's the founder of the website Toxic Free Airlines, which is toxicfreeairlines.com. And you can go there and find out more about what we've been talking about the toxic chemicals that are on airline flights that you may be exposed to, and also what you can do about it. Dee, we were talking before the break about that people shouldn't be dying on the job, that they should have confidence that they can go to work, get paid, live a long and happy life, and not die prematurely. Here in the United States, we have something called the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. It's called OSHA. And it has a lot of rules for what people can be exposed to on the job. And I think it only applies to people who are working with chemicals, and not necessarily like people who are working in offices and things like that. But I think that there's just morally and ethically that people should be provided with a healthy environment. I mean, we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness here in the United States, and I think you have something similar in England, but it just makes sense that if you value the people who are working for you, that you should provide them good health.
Absolutely, yeah. We have the similar regulations in the UK. They're called the Control of Substances Hazardous to Health, and airlines are allowed to get away with never doing these tests. Anybody who knows that they're working with chemicals, they have to do risk assessment, and the workers are tested. And they, for instance, if you know you're working with organophosphate, then you're tested regularly, I think it's every month, to see what your level of enzyme is in your liver. None of that happens. I wrote to my airline and I said, can you tell me why you've never done a control of substances hazardous to health risk assessment? And they said, it's because we're not aware of any risk. And I said, I think you'll find that's the wrong way around. You're supposed to find out if there are any risks, not just decide there aren't any.
Wait, this is the organization who's supposed to be protecting you from health hazards? They don't know that there are risks associated with these chemicals?
Well,
I am just a consumer. I am just an average citizen, and I know there are risks associated with these chemicals, and you know that. How come the agency that is supposed to be protecting you doesn't know that?
Because they don't want to know. It's the only enclosed environment that does not have chemical detectors. And they give interviews saying that there isn't the technology. Rubbish. We had chemical detectors on submarines, didn't we, in World War II. Mine shafts have them. How come an aircraft full of passengers has no chemical detector? If I rent out a caravan, by law, I need to put a carbon monoxide detector in there to make sure the occupants are safe. There's nothing like that on an aircraft. So you can have odourless fume events. And then nobody knows what's happening. And this could explain why we have incidents like the one you had a couple of years ago in the States where the pilots forgot to land. How can you forget to land? In all my years of flying, I don't see how that's possible unless everybody was affected, because you would have passengers saying, I thought somebody meeting me, are we going to be landing soon? But nobody noticed, and they overflew their destination by an hour.
Oh, my God.
That, I think it was going either to or from Hawaii. And that was quite a major incident, and they said they lost situational awareness. But how is that possible? Only if their brains
That's chemicals. That's chemical exposures. Yeah. I mean, they're neurotoxic. Exactly. They affect your brain and your nervous system and your ability to think.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, one of the scariest things, it's not just a health problem, it's a safety problem, because there may be a passenger who's very, very healthy. They've got tons of enzymes in their liver, and they think, I'm all right, Jack. But if your pilot suffers from aerotoxic syndrome, and there are many who do, then you are still in trouble. So we have to get this sorted from a safety point of view. Pilots do have full phase, 100% oxygen on the flight deck. Passengers don't. But one of the first things it knocks out is your ability to reason. So you have to know that you need to put the oxygen on.
That's exactly right. And what happens is that your ability to think goes out. And then you're not aware that you're not thinking properly. You just can't think. And if your thinking goes out, you can't do anything to help yourself.
Yeah, I've been on a flight where I couldn't remember how to put someone on oxygen. And something I've been doing for over 20 years, and I was standing there, and I didn't have a clue. And I was thinking, what on earth's wrong with me? And now all these sort of incidents make sense.
You're just making me speechless with some of these things that you're telling me, because it's just, you know, here in the United States, and I'm probably in the UK too, there are a number of chemicals that we're being exposed to in consumer products, not as deadly as what you're talking about. I mean, we don't have people dying in this great of numbers, but we're also not in enclosed areas like a airplane cabin. But it amazes me that if you have something like formaldehyde, for example, if you were working with formaldehyde in an occupational setting, there would be warnings and things. Formaldehyde causes cancer. But there can be formaldehyde all over consumer products, and there's no warning labels needed at all. And something that has just been alarming to me for very many years, because I've been doing this for over 30 years, and is just that the same chemical can be in different situations, and it's not consistent about how that chemical is treated or what the warnings are, or that it even needs to be required to be listed on the label. And you know, an airline is kind of, in a way, a consumer product. You buy it like you would buy anything else, and you go into this environment. It's like buying a hotel room or something, that you're putting your hands in your life in the hands of the person who's producing that product. And people need to be more responsible. These businesses need to be more responsible. It's not that we don't know that the toxics exist.
Yeah, we've all been so trusting for years, haven't we? We thought that the government had our best interests at heart, and we just didn't realize that the majority of these chemicals are untested, and, you know, there are no detectors on board an aircraft for a reason, because they don't want to know. The minute we find out exactly how bad this problem is, they will have to pay compensation, and they don't want to do that. The laws exist, but they're just not being implemented. We have one in the UK called the Civil Aviation Act, and I wrote to my representative in Parliament, and he said, yes, you are protected under that. The Secretary of State is responsible for the welfare of all on board a British aircraft. Marvellous. But they delegate that responsibility to the Civil Aviation Authority. So then you write to the Civil Aviation Authority, and they say, oh, no, it's not us, it's the Health and Safety Executive. So then you talk to the Health and Safety, and they say, no, we have a memorandum of understanding. So they're all passing the buck. Nobody is taking responsibility for actually making sure that the law is upheld. And it's passengers that are going to make the difference.
I agree. You know, as you were talking earlier in the show, I just started having this picture in my mind of a movie. And there isn't a movie like this, I'm sure. Well, I'm not sure, but what I got in my mind was to make a movie that where...
Well, actually, one has been made. It had its premiere in February 2015. It was made by an ill health retired captain. He was one of the probably the very first person to find out exactly what we were being exposed to. And, you know, he used his loss of license money to find out everything, and he's been fantastic. His name is Captain Tristan Lorraine, and he has made a film called A Dark Reflection, and it's available on the internet to watch on demand now. It's at adarkreflection.com, and it's a fictional account of two journalists looking into this cover-up and finding out what's in the engine, although in real life it was pilots who did it. But it's really, really worth seeing. I'm in it very, very briefly for about 2 seconds as an expert.
Well, the movie I was seeing in my mind was that consumers would just get outraged and that there would be like a massive strike, that people would not fly and that people would buy tickets and then not fly, and that the whole airline system would just like get shut down for a day to bring attention to this, because the passengers would refuse to fly on toxic airplanes.
And I know we've had a strike in Germany of crew trying to highlight this, but yeah, if the passengers could, that would be brilliant. You know, they need to know about this. We are seeing aircraft now diverting and landing because passengers are complaining. They're saying, that is going to make me ill. I don't want to breathe it in. And that's what we need to happen, because I think we've all been too passive for too long. There are things you can do. You can take vitamin C and supplements and read books on detoxing and go for a sauna. But ultimately, we need to sort this problem out and make sure that the air is safe for all of us to breathe.
The number one rule in the field of toxicology is remove the person from the poison. Yeah. And that's the number one thing to do. It doesn't say, oh, go ahead and poison everybody and then make everybody detox. It says remove the person from the poison. And what we need to do is stop having poison planes. So we've only got just a few seconds. So thank you so much for being here.
This is important
information. And you can go to Dee's website at toxicfreeairlines.com. I'm Deborah Lindad, and you've been listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. Be well.